Hello, party people, and welcome to Mount Charleston. It's about 30 minutes west of the Strip, west of the Las Vegas Strip. And I come up here at different times during the year. During the summer, it's really nice to come up here because it is 30 degrees Fahrenheit colder than the Las Vegas Valley. When I left my house, it was just shy of 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Up here, it is 83 Fahrenheit, which is nice. It's fantastic, especially with this little mountain breeze that we've got coming through here. In the winter, I like coming up here because there's actually snow. There is a skiing and snowboarding canyon a little bit over that way from here. But absolutely gorgeous area. It's hard for people to believe that this beach is like wildlife activity is out this close to the Strip. You can drive just half an hour west and you're looking at wild horses, wild donkeys, beautiful pine trees, canyons. There's a bunch of like three-season homes up here where people will come up here for three or four seasons. They don't usually come up here for the winter. And one of the drawbacks, we actually looked at getting a house up here. One of the drawbacks is that you're not allowed to do Airbnb up here. They don't allow any short-term rentals, which is a bummer because I would absolutely love to come up here for like a week every now and then, get away from the heat. It's actually really nice. And it's also a really fun curvy drive coming up through here. It's a really fun place to come take sports cars. The local Porsche Club comes through here on a regular basis and drives up and down through the canyons. It's a really fun place to be. So let's go through your top voted questions from PollGab. The top voted question from Neil says, our sysadmin team tried to quick format the production SQL Server drives because they say they don't lose data. I don't even understand what on earth is going on here. Says the SQL admin stopped them. Would Windows admins be the team that would have to manage storage snapshot backups? You've got a bunch of different questions in here. It's sounding like you don't format drives unless you're going to use them for the first time. You wouldn't format backup drives. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. My first guess is that I don't think anybody who's involved with this question is really qualified to manage backups or formatting. So I'd reel it way back in and start asking basic questions like, has anybody on the team been to a formal training class since the pandemic? And that may help open up some eyes as to who's qualified to do stuff. Well, like I learned it on the job. That kind of scares me a little bit there, especially with that question about quick formatting drives and what that has to do with backups. My Clustered Index Sucks asks, your 5 and 5 guideline is great, but when the clustered index key is useless, do you ever create a non-clustered index with a useful key to reduce key lookups? No, you're missing the point. The clustered index isn't for querying. It is for querying in certain situations like a data warehouse. But the clustered index is not for looking up people by name. The clustered index is for data storage. It's where your data lives. You do not want to create multiple copies of the clustered index with varying types of columns trying to reduce key lookups, because at the end of the day, that would be a key lookup if you use that index to get extra data that you didn't need for other reasons. What I think you might be referring to is called a covering index, taking useful indexes and adding more columns to them. But that's where the 5 and 5 guideline comes in. The more columns that you add, the more copies of your data that you're keeping, the longer your updates will take, the more blocking you're going to have. I bet, I'm just taking a guess, but I bet you went to my fundamentals class and then you didn't continue on with the mastering index tuning class. Check out the mastering index tuning class. We talk about key lookups in there, where they make sense to mitigate, where they don't really matter, how you design a good clustering key, and much more. That's the mastering index tuning class. Mohit asks, hey, Brand, have you ever gotten rejected in any of your interviews? Yes, many times. What's your favorite interview story? This one I have told, but it's probably been a couple few years since I've told it, so I'll tell it again. So I went, long before I was quote unquote internet famous, I went for a job interview, and the company was in one city where I worked, but they had a remote DBA who lived in another city. And so I was sitting in the room with the interviewer, and then there was the DBA who was calling in remotely. And the DBA asked me several good questions, but one of the questions the DBA asked me was, if you were going to build your own monitoring tool for SQL Server, what would you do? And I said, I wouldn't. I said, if you're trying to hire me to build a monitoring tool, then we're both in trouble. I said, I'm not qualified to do that. I don't want a job doing that. Is that what you're hiring for? Because if it is, I apologize for wasting your time. And he said, no, we're not hiring for that. I said, okay, good. I said, so why would you ask me how to? He said, but I need to know, you know, how you would go about doing that. And I said, I wouldn't. I said, I would buy a third-party monitoring tool. They cost about $1,000 per monitored server. Here's a list of several good ones. I would pick one of those and roll with it. And he said, well, isn't there a free one? And I said, I don't know of a good free one. There might be one. I just don't know of it. And at $1,000, it's a rounding error for monitoring tools compared to the SQL Server licensing costs. And he said, well, do you know about monitoring tool X, you know, whatever the name of it was? And I said, nope, never heard of it. He said, well, I wrote it. I was like, oh boy, here we go. You know, that can write off that. I'm not getting that job. He said, would you ever use it? And I said, well, I've never heard of it, but, you know, tell me about it. And he said, it's completely free. It's been in SQL Server magazine a few times. It's open source. And I said, okay, so when I have a problem with it, where do I go? You know, is there some kind of support forum where I can go and someone else can help me when I'm trying to troubleshoot things because monitoring is down? He's like, no, there's not really anything like that. I said, well, then I wouldn't use it. I count on the monitoring, and if that thing goes down, then I don't know when my production where my production servers are at or what's going on with them. Needless to say, I did not get that job. That interview did not go very well. But it was really funny because I met up with that guy again years later after I became internet famous. And I said, do you remember interviewing me for a position? And here was, and he was like, oh my God, that was you. Yeah. And we had a lot of laughs about it. And we got along great for years afterwards. I've lost track. I need to check in with him and see what he's doing these days. But no, that was one of my favorite kinds of interview stories there. Woo, that one did not go well at all. I'll tell you another one because it's funny. So I went in for another one, and the hiring manager loved me. The manager of the department loved me, and they put me in for a tech interview near the end of it with whoever one of the DBAs was. The team had like two or three DBAs, I think. And this DBA, right from the start of the interview, gives me this really in-depth technical question about TempDB and a problem with TempDB. I can't remember what it was, but it was a very specific problem with TempDB. And I was kind of taken aback because it was so brutally technical. And I was like, you know, I've never faced that problem before. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of it even. That's really cool, but I don't have an answer for you. And she keeps going on, you know, going deeper and deeper about, you know, what this is happening and this is happening. And I was like, I can tell that you're fishing for an answer or something specific here, but I don't have it for you. I said, let me ask you something. Is this a problem that you're facing today? And the DBA said, yeah. And I said, have you found the answer? And they go, no. I said, well, have you opened a support call with Microsoft? Because this is a really interesting question. And they go, yeah. And I said, oh, how long has that support case been open with Microsoft? And they're like, well, they've been working on it for a couple of weeks. And I'm like, are you telling me that you expect me to know the answer to something that Microsoft support has been struggling with for a couple of weeks? And you expect me as a DBA off the street to know the answer to that? And I was like, I'm not going to pass that. She's like, well, that's the kind of person that we're looking for. And I'm like, that, if you're looking for someone who's so good that they know more than Microsoft does about that particular problem, I'm sorry, that's not me. And the DBA was like, I think we're done here, and leaves. And the hiring manager and the manager of the team was still in the room at that point. And I said, I get I didn't get the job. I totally understand it. I don't have a problem with that. I said, but let me ask you something. That person who just left here, were they in the running for this job? And the manager was like, as a matter of fact, they were. And I said, well, I don't think you're going to find anybody that that person approves of, because they're trying to get Mission Impossible here. I said, I don't want the gig. It doesn't make sense for me. All right, I'm going to tell you one other story because it was really funny. Boy, this is just going to turn into interview stories. So I go in and take a job. I'm excited. I'd gone through multiple interviews. I take the job. I don't think I've ever told this one. I think I have, but it's probably been 10 years. I go and take the job, and I was everything looked good. And as I'm leaving the interviews after going, yep, I think we've come to an agreement on salary. Everything sounds good. As we're leaving, I'm walking out the door from the interview. They're like, do you want to meet, you know, some of the other people who you'll be working with? I said, yeah, sure. And we go into an area where several tech people were working. And it was a room, maybe 20 feet by 20 feet, like a small, like a bedroom kind of sized room, like a big bedroom. And in there, there were maybe 12 or 15 people working at school desks. You know, the kind of desks where it was like maybe this wide, like wide enough to hold a monitor, a keyboard, and a mouse, and that was it. Like you couldn't have anything else on your desk. And I'm a tall person, I get that, but I could reach my hand out. If I was sitting down in a chair, I could reach my hands out and put my hands on my two coworkers that would be on either side of me. I could put my hands on their shoulders. That's how close it was. And then same thing, if you like turn the other way, you could put your hands on the other coworkers. So everybody could see everybody else's monitors. You couldn't have a private conversation. You couldn't write a private email. I was horrified, and as after we left that room, on the way out the door, I said to the person who was hiring me, I was like, am I working in that room? And they said, no. The DBAs, they have a different room where they work in. And I was immediately like, cash out, I'm done. I don't need to see the DBA's rooms. The fact that you would put tech people into a situation like that, I don't want to work for a company that does their employees like that. And the recruiter was so pissed. The recruiter who got me into that job was so pissed because they're like, what do you mean? You came to an agreement on salary. Everything sounded good. And I was like, I would love to take you to this office where these people were working, because that was the worst technical working conditions that I've ever seen. I've seen worse working conditions in like factories, restaurants, people who dig ditches, you know, but that was the worst technical workspace I've ever seen. Next up, AG Avoider asks, has the cloud made failover clustering any cheaper or more popular? Multi-attach EBS costs so little that I would predict it, but I haven't seen any evidence. No, because generally speaking, up in the cloud, people are trying to avoid single points of failure. There's a saying you'll hear up in the cloud, treat your servers like cattle, not like pets. As in, you with cattle, you might name them, but you're not really going to mourn their loss. You're expecting cattle to grow up, give you milk, and then you're going to kill them, and then you're going to eat them. It's not like with pets where you're trying to teach them tricks and you let them sleep with you at night and all that kind of thing. You want to think of your servers as disposable, and failover clustering clustered instance with single EBS volumes that are a single point of failure, that's much more risk than you would want. Is it doable in the cloud? Sure, it goes against good cloud architecture principles. Kiwi SQL says, hi Brent, love your work since I started working with SQL Server. Thanks, glad you like it. Who are the other consultants in the SQL Server world that you follow and why? If you look for Brent Ozar, I tell you what, I'll put a link up for it. BrentOzar.com/go/stuff I follow. We'll make that brentozar.com/go/stuff-I-follow. By the time you see that, that'll point to the RSS collection that I use. I use Feedly, and then that way you can subscribe to all the same blogs that I follow. It's a real Feedly's fantastic, lets you centralize all your RSS feeds in one place, get all your email newsletters in one place. It's really handy. Next up, speaking of following, G Surgeon asks, hello, Brent. Is there a way to notify your followers a little bit earlier when you're about to host office hours? No, because see, the problem is I do it in my spare time. I do it when I have time where it's convenient for me, when I'm not working with clients, stuff like that. I know if I was going to be really successful in the streaming space, like if I wanted to be successful and famous as a live streamer, I would have to have a predictable schedule. That is not my goal with SQL Server streaming. I do this when it's convenient to me to answer questions, and then you're better off watching the recordings on YouTube. But you can follow my Twitch channel for SQL Server if you want to find out when I'm going live. You just only get a couple of minutes of advance notice. And then let's see here. Oh, we've been going for quite a while because of the interview thing. Coolstad asks, hi, Brent. Every Monday morning, I run SP Blitz Index as well as Pinal Dave's index check script. Pinal script returns more suggestions than SP Blitz Index. Is there that much of a difference? Yes. SP Blitz Index looks for indexes that would have been used multiple times per day. I believe Pinal's doesn't have a filter about a minimum amount of impact, whereas SP Blitz Index does. You can read the documentation for SP Blitz Index. We talk about it in there. There's also a parameter that will let you choose how much filtering we do. So check out the parameters there. I wouldn't lower that threshold, though. Oh my God, no, because if we're not returning it as a missing index, the query just isn't being used that often, and I wouldn't want to change the database to make that work. Next up, JRL asks, oh, I really should have looked at this. My impression is that your income went to the next level once you started to focus on delivering training. What would your plan B have been if training hadn't grown income to the level that you wanted? I have no idea. So I had a lot of plan Bs around building apps, but I don't think there was ever a plan B that my training wouldn't work, because I've done training for, oh my God, since the late 2000s maybe. And if there's one thing that I've had confidence in terms of my skills, it's my ability to do training classes and make money for that. I've never needed a plan B for that one. It's not that I don't do other stuff too. Like, I still do consulting. We still build apps. We have SQL Constant Care, the consultant toolkit. I'm not worried about it there. Interesting question though. Next up, my friend always has problems, says, my friend has two SQL servers in an availability group. CheckDB on the primary node returns errors, but running it several times comes up with different errors each time. Call Microsoft. Okay, so first off, go to brentozar.com/go/corrupt. brentozar.com/go/corrupt. I have an exact checklist on exactly what I do when I encounter corruption. Walks you through it piece by piece. I'm not going to walk you through it here because it wouldn't be a good use of our time. But if you go to brentozar.com/go/corrupt, checklist on how to handle this exact situation with exactly what I do. Next up, Neil says, is it safe to bring an old version of MSDB to a new SQL server running a newer version? We have thousands of jobs we need to migrate. Oh, God. So I personally have never done that. I personally have never migrated MSDB from one version to another. What I would do instead is script out your jobs, scripting out your jobs and then bringing them over that way via scripting. The other thing I'd say is there's never been a better time to stop and say, what are we doing with all these jobs? Like, we need an inventory of who's accountable for each job, because otherwise you could be just hammering the SQL server for no reason whatsoever. And we'll do one more. T. Earl Grey Hot says, is there a less intrusive way to get page fullness than SysDMDB index physical stats in detailed mode? I have an app that suffers from low page density, but detailed is too intrusive. I have problems getting a picture of which indexes need attention. So you already have your answer then. You said you have problems with some indexes that have low page density. You have your answer. You found the answer. Those are the ones that you're going to want to rebuild on a regular basis. You don't need to check them anymore. Whatever the workload does that brings you to a point where that physical stats warns you that you have low page density, your workload, until your workload changes, is going to continue to produce the same issues. Just go schedule full rebuilds, like once a month. One of the cool things with Ola Hallengren's index rebuild scripts is that you can specify particular indexes. So that way you can just feed them in, or you can table drive them as opposed to checking each time. Then that way, if you want to check, say, once a quarter to see which indexes aren't being handled well, then you're fine. But you can also do that on a restored copy of the database. You don't have to do it in production. Go restore somewhere else, check your fullness there, and then make your list of the indexes that you're going to want to start rebuilding on a regular basis there. But don't keep checking. Are you low? Is everything okay now? What about now? Come up with a longer-term strategy. All right, there's a good handful of questions. Oh, it's so nice outside today, I tell you what. I am going to go now make my run back down the mountain and go grab me some lunch somewhere. Boy, I'm not looking forward to it. When I sit out here, I'm like, oh man, I could totally just go do lunch outside in a restaurant somewhere, but I know I'm up at 8,000 feet here, and I know as soon as I go higher than that, or as soon as I go back down lower than that, sitting outside in Las Vegas is not going to be an option. So I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.